Chapter 41. Disagreements. Thunder rumbled across the slate-dark afternoon sky. Rand pulled the hood of his cloak further up, hoping to keep at least some of the cold rain off. Red stepped through muddy puddles doggedly. The hood hung sodden around Rand's head, as the rest of the cloak did around his shoulders, and his fine black coat was just as wet and as cold. The temperature would not have far to drop before snow or sleet came down instead of rain. Snow would fall soon, again. The people in the village they had passed through said two snows had already come this year. Shivering, Rand almost wished it was snowing. Then at least he would not be soaked to the skin. The column plodded along, keeping a wary eye on the rolling country. Ingtar's gray owl hung heavily, even when the wind gusted. Huron sometimes pulled his cowl back to sniff the air. He said neither rain nor cold had any effect on a trail. Certainly not on the kind of trail he was seeking, but so far the sniffer had found nothing. Behind him, Rand heard Uno mutter a curse. Loyal kept checking his saddlebags. He did not seem to mind getting wet himself, but he worried continually about his books. Everyone was miserable, except for Varen, who appeared too lost in thought to even notice that her hood had slid back, exposing her face to the rain. "Can't you do something about this?" Rand demanded of her. A small voice in the back of his head told him he could do it himself. All he need do was embrace Sidene. So sweet the call of Sidene. To be filled with the one power, to be one with the storm. Turn the skies to sunlight, or ride the storm as it raged, whip it to fury and scour Toman head clean from the sea to the plain. Embrace Sidene. He suppressed the longing ruthlessly. The Aes Sedai gave a start.
What? Oh, I suppose. A little. I couldn't stop a storm this big, not by myself. It covers too much area. But I could lessen it some, where we are, at least.
She wiped rain from her face, seemed to realize for the first time that her hood had slipped, and pulled it back up absently.
Then why don't you?
Matt said. The shivering face peering out from under his hood looked at death's door, but his voice was vigorous.
Because if I used that much of the one power, any Aes Sedai closer than 10 miles would know someone had channeled. We don't want to bring these Shan-Chan down on us with some of their Demani.
Her mouth tightened angrily.
They had learned a little of the invaders in that village called Atuan's Mill. Though most of what they had heard hatched more questions than it answered. The people had babbled one moment and clamped their mouths shut the next, trembling and looking over their shoulders.
They all shook with fear that the Shan-Chan would return with their monsters and their Demani. That women who should have been Aes Sedai were instead leashed like animals frightened the villagers even more than the strange creatures the Shan-Chan commanded, things the folk of Atuan's Mill could only describe in whispers as coming from nightmares. And worst of all, the examples the Shan-Chan had made before leaving still chilled the people to their marrow. They had buried their dead, but they feared to clean away the large, charred patch in the village square. None of them would say what had happened there, but Huron had vomited as soon as they entered the village, and he would not go near the blackened ground. Atuan's Mill had been half deserted. Some had fled to Falma, thinking the Shan-Chan would not be so harsh in a town they held fast, and others had gone east. More had said they were thinking of it. There was fighting on Almuth Plain, Tarabonners battling Domani, it was said, but such houses and barns as were burned there were kindled by torches in the hands of men. Even a war was easier to face than what the Shan-Chan had done, what they might do.
Why did Fain bring the horn here? Perrin muttered.
The question had been asked by each of them at one time or another, and no one had an answer.
There's war. And these Shan-Chan and their monsters. Why here?
Ingtar turned in his saddle to look back at them. His face appeared almost as haggard as Matt's.
There are always men who see chances for their own advantage in the confusion of war. Fain is one like that. No doubt he thinks to steal the horn again from the Dark One this time, and use it for his own profit.
The Father of Lies never lays simple plans, Varen said.
It may be that he wants Fane to bring the horn here for some reason known only in Sheol Ghul.
Monsters, Matt snorted.
His cheeks were sunken now, his eyes hollow. That he sounded healthy only made it worse.
They saw some Trollocs or a Fade, if you ask me.
Well, why not? If the Seanchan have Aes Sedai fighting for them, why not Fades and Trollocs? He caught Varen staring at him and flinched.
Well, they are. Unleashes are not. They can channel, and that makes them Aes Sedai.
He glanced at Rand and gave a ragged laugh.
That makes you Aes Sedai. The light help us all.
Massima came galloping from ahead through the mud and the steady rain.
There's another village ahead, my lord, he said as he pulled in beside Ingtar.
His eyes only swept past Rand, but they tightened, and he did not look at Rand again.
It is empty, my lord. No villagers, no Seanchan, nobody at all. The houses all look sound, though, except for two or three that... Well, they aren't there anymore, my lord.
Ingtar raised his hand and signaled for a trot. The village Massima had found covered the slopes of a hill with a paved square at the top around a circle of stone walls. The houses were of stone, all flat-roofed, and few more than a single story. Three that had been larger, along one side of the square, were only heaps of blackened rubble. Shattered chunks of stone and roof beams lay scattered across the square. A few shutters banged when the wind gusted. Ingtar dismounted in front of the only large building still standing. The creaking sign above its door bore a woman juggling stars, but no name. Rain came off the corners in two steady drizzles. Varen hurried inside while Ingtar spoke.
Uno, search every house. If there is anyone left, perhaps they can tell us what happened here. And maybe a little more about these Seanchan. And if there's any food, bring that too, and blankets.
Uno nodded and began telling off men. Ingtar turned to Hurin.
What do you smell? Did Fane come through here?
Hurin, rubbing his nose, shook his head.
Not him, my lord. And not the Trollocs, neither. Whoever did that left a stench, though.
He pointed to the wreckage that had been houses.
It was killing, my lord. There were people in there.
Seanchan, Ingtar growled.
Let's get inside. Ragan, find some sort of stable for the horses.
Varen already had fires going in both of the big fireplaces at either end of the common room, and was warming her hands at one, her sodden cloak spread out on one of the tables dotting the tiled floor. She had found a few candles, too, now burning on a table stuck in their own tallow. Emptiness and quiet, except for the occasional grumble of thunder, added to the flickering shadows to give the place a cavernous feel. Rand tossed his equally wet cloak and a coat on a table and joined her. Only Loyal seemed more interested in checking his books than in warming himself.
We will never find the Horn of Valir this way, Ingtar said. 3 days since we arrived here.
He shuddered and scrubbed a hand through his hair. Rand wondered what the Shinarin had seen in his other lives.
Another two at least to Falma, and we have not found so much as a hair of Fane or Dark Friends. There are scores of villages along the coast. He could have gone to any of them and taken ship anywhere by now, if he was ever here.
He is here, Varen said calmly, and he went to Falma.
And he's still here, Rand said.
Waiting for me. Please, light, he's still waiting.
Hurin still hasn't caught a whiff of him, Ingtar said.
The sniffer shrugged as if he felt himself at fault for the failure.
Why would he choose Falma? If those villagers are to be believed, Falma is held by these Seanchan. I would give my best hound to know who they are and where they came from.
Who they are is not important to us.
Varen knelt and unfastened her saddlebags, pulling out dry clothes.
At least we have rooms in which to change our clothes, though it will do us little good unless the weather changes. Ingtar, it may be well that what the villagers told us is right, that they are the descendants of Artur Hawkwing's armies come back. What matters is that Padon Fane has gone to Falma. The writing's in the dungeon at Faldara.
Never mentioned Fane. Forgive me, Aes Sedai. But that could have been a trick as easily as dark prophecy. I can't believe even Trollocs would be stupid enough to tell us everything they were going to do before they did it.
She twisted to look up at him. "And what do you mean to do if you will not take my advice?"
"I mean to have the Horn of Valir," Ingtar said firmly. "Forgive me, but I have to trust my own senses before some words scrawled by a Trolloc."
"A murdrol, surely," Varen murmured, but he did not even pause.
"Or a dark friend, seeming to betray himself out of his own mouth. I mean to quarter the ground until Huron smells a trail, or we find Fane in the flesh. I must have the horn, Varen," said I must."
"That isn't the way," Huron said softly.
"Not must. What happens, happens."
No one paid him any mind.
"We all must," Varen murmured, peering into her saddlebags. "Yet some things may be even more important than that."
She did not say more, but Rand grimaced. He longed to get away from her and her prods and hints.
"I am not the dragon reborn. Light, but I wish I could just get away from Aes Sedai completely."
"Ingtar, I think I'm riding on to Falma. Fane is there, I am sure he is. And if I don't come soon, he will do something to hurt Emmons Field." He had not mentioned that part before. They all stared at him, Matt and Perrin frowning, worried but considering. Varen as if she had just seen a new piece added to the puzzle. Loyal looked astonished, and Huron seemed confused. Ingtar was openly disbelieving.
"Why would he do that?" the Shinaran said.
"I don't know," Rand lied, "but that was part of the message he left with Barthanas."
"And did Barthanas say Fane was going to Falma?" Ingtar demanded.
"No.
It wouldn't matter if he had."
He gave a bitter laugh.
"Dark friends lie as naturally as they breathe."
"Rand," Matt said, "if I knew how to stop Fane from hurting Emmons Field, I would. If I was sure he was going to. But I need that dagger, Rand, and Huron has the best chance of finding it."
"I will go wherever you go, Rand," Loyal said.
He had finished making sure the books were dry and was taking off his sodden coat.
"But I don't see where a few more days will change anything one way or another now. Try being a little less hasty for once."
"It doesn't matter to me whether we go to Falma now, later, or never," Perrin said with a shrug. "But if Fane really is threatening Emmons Field, well, Matt's right. Huron is the best way to find him."
"I can't find him, Lord Rand," Huron put in. "Let me get one sniff of him, and I'll take you right to him. There's never anything else left a trail like his."
"You must make your own choice, Rand," Varen said carefully. "But remember that Falma is held by invaders, about whom we still know next to nothing. If you go to Falma alone, you may find yourself a prisoner or worse, and that will serve nothing. I am sure whatever choice you make will be the right one."
"Tarviran,"
Loyal rumbled. Rand threw up his hands. Uno came in from the square, shaking rain off his cloak.
"Not a flaming soul to be found, my lord. Looks to me like they ran like striped pigs. Livestock's all gone, and there isn't a bloody cart or wagon left either. Half the houses are stripped to the flaming doors. I'll wager my next month's pay you could follow them by the bloody furniture they tossed on the side of the road when they realized it was only weighing down their flaming wagons." "What about clothes?" Ingtar asked.
Uno blinked his one eye in surprise.
"Just a few bits and pieces, my lord. Mainly what they didn't think was bloody worth taking with them." "They will have to do. Huron, I mean to dress you and a few more as local people, as many as we can manage, so you won't stand out. I want you to swing wide, north and south, until you cross the trail."
More soldiers were coming in, and they all gathered around Ingtar and Huron to listen. Rand leaned his hands on the mantle over the fireplace and stared into the flames. They made him think of Baalzaman's eyes.
"There isn't much time," he said. "I feel something pulling me to Falma, and there isn't much time."
He saw Varen watching him and added harshly,
"Not that. It's Fane I have to find. It has nothing to do with that."
Varen nodded.
The wheel weaves as the wheel wills, and we are all woven into the pattern. Fane has been here weeks before us, perhaps months. A few more days will make little difference in whatever is going to happen.
I'm going to get some sleep, he muttered, picking up his saddlebags. They can't have carried off all the beds.
Upstairs, he did find beds, but only a few still had mattresses, and those so lumpy he thought it might be more comfortable to sleep on the floor. Finally, he chose a bed where the mattress simply sagged in the middle. There was nothing else in the room except one wooden chair and a table with a rickety leg. He took off his wet things, putting on a dry shirt and breeches before lying down, since there were no sheets or blankets, and propped his sword beside the head of the bed. Wryly, he thought that the only thing dry he had for a coverlet was the dragon's banner. He left it safely buckled inside the saddlebags. Rain drummed on the roof and thunder growled overhead, and now and again a lightning flash lit the windows. Shivering, he rolled this way and that on the mattress, seeking some comfortable way to lie, wondering if the banner would not do for a blanket after all, wondering if he should ride on to Falma. He rolled to his other side, and Balzamon was standing beside the chair with the pure white length of the dragon's banner in his hands. The room seemed darker there, as if Balzamon stood on the edge of a cloud of oily black smoke. Nearly healed burns crisscrossed his face, and as Rand looked, his pitch-dark eyes vanished for an instant, replaced by endless caverns of fire. Rand's saddlebags lay by his feet, buckles undone, flap thrown back where the banner had been hidden.
The time comes closer, Luzerne. 1,000 threads draw tight, and soon you will be tied and trapped, set to a course you cannot change. Madness, death. Before you die, will you once more kill everything you love?
Rand glanced at the door, but he made no move except to sit up on the side of the bed. What good to try running from the Dark One? His throat felt like sand.
I'm not the dragon, father of lies, he said hoarsely.
The darkness behind Balzamon roiled, and furnaces roared as Balzamon laughed.
You honor me, and belittle yourself. I know you too well. I've faced you 1,000 times. 1,000 times 1,000. I know you to your miserable soul, Luzerne Kinslayer.
He laughed again. Rand put a hand in front of his face against the heat of that fiery mouth.
What do you want? I will not serve you. I will not do anything that you want. I'll die first.
You will die, worm. How many times have you died across the span of the ages, fool? And how much has death availed you? The grave is cold and lonely, save for the worms. The grave is mine. This time there will be no rebirth for you. This time the wheel of time will be broken and the world remade in the image of the shadow. This time your death will be forever.
Which will you choose? Death everlasting or life eternal? And power?
Rand hardly realized that he was on his feet. The void had surrounded him, Sidene was there, and the one power flowed into him. That fact almost cracked the emptiness. Was this real? Was it a dream? Could he channel in a dream? But the torrent rushing into him swept away his doubts. He hurled it at Balzamon, hurled the pure one power, the force that turned the wheel of time, a force that could make seas burn and eat mountains. Balzamon took half a step back, holding the banner clutched before him. Flames leaped into his wide eyes and mouth, and the darkness seemed to cloak him in shadow. In the shadow. The power sank into that black mist and vanished, soaked up like water on parched sand. Rand drew on Sidene, pulled for more and still more. His flesh seemed so cold, it must shatter at a touch. It burned as if it must boil away. His bones felt on the point of crisping to cold crystal ash. He did not care. It was like drinking life itself.
Fool! Balsamon roared. You will destroy yourself!
Matt.
The thought floated somewhere beyond the consuming flood.
The dagger, the horn, Thane, Emmons Field. I can't die yet.
He was not sure how he did it, but suddenly the power was gone, and Sidene and the void. Shuddering uncontrollably, he fell to his knees beside the bed, arms wrapped around himself in a vain effort to stop their twitching.
That is better, Luz Theron.
Balsamon tossed the banner to the floor and put his hands on the chair back. Wisps of smoke rose from between his fingers. The shadow no longer encompassed him.
There is your banner, kinslayer. Much good it will do you. 1,000 strings, laid over 1,000 years, have drawn you here. 10,000 woven throughout the ages tie you like a sheep for slaughter. The wheel itself holds you prisoner to your fate age after age. But I can set you free. You cowering cur! I alone in the entire world can teach you how to wield the power. I alone can stop it killing you before you have a chance to go mad. I alone can stop the madness. You have served me before. Serve me again, Luz Theron, or be destroyed forever.
My name, Rand forced between chattering teeth, is Randall Thor.
His shivering forced him to squeeze his eyes shut, and when he opened them again, he was alone. Balsamon was gone. The shadow was gone. His saddlebags stood against the chair with the buckles done up and one side bulging with the bulk of the dragon's banner, just as he had left it. But on the chair back, tendrils of smoke still rose from the charred impressions of fingers.
Chapter 42 Falma. Nynaeve pressed Elaine back into the narrow alleyway between a cloth merchant's shop and a potter's works as the pair of women linked by a silvery leash passed by, heading down the cobblestone street toward Falma Harbor. They did not dare allow that pair to come too close. The people in the street made way for those two even more quickly than they did for Shan Chan soldiers or the occasional noble's palanquin, thickly curtained now that the days were cold. Even the street artists did not offer to draw them in chalks or pencils, although they pestered everyone else. Nynaeve's mouth tightened as her eyes followed the Suldam and the Domani through the crowd. Even after weeks in the town, the sight sickened her. Perhaps it sickened her more now. She could not imagine doing that to any woman, not even Moiraine or Leandrin. Well, maybe Leandrin, she admitted sourly. Sometimes at night, in the small, smelly room the two of them had rented above a fishmonger, she thought of what she would like to do to Leandrin when she got her hands on her. Leandrin even more than Suroth. More than once she had been shocked at her own cruelty, even while she was delighted at her inventiveness. Still trying to keep the pair in sight, her eye fell on a bony man well down the street, before the shifting throng hid him again. She had only a flash of a big nose and a narrow face. He wore a rich bronze velvet robe of Shan Chen cut over his clothes, but she thought that he was no Shan Chen, though the servant following him was, and a servant of high degree, with one temple shaved. The local people had not taken to Shan Chen fashions, particularly that one. That looked like Padan Fane, she thought incredulously. It couldn't be. Not here.
Nynaeve, Elaine said softly. Could we move on now? That fellow selling apples is looking at his table as if he's thinking he had more a few moments ago, and I would not want him wondering what I have in my pockets.
They both wore long coats made of sheepskin, with the fleece turned in and bright red spirals embroidered across the breast. It was country garb, but it passed well enough in Falma, where many people had come in from the farms and villages. Among so many strangers, the two of them had been able to sink in unnoticed. Nynaeve had combed out her braid, and her gold ring, the serpent eating its own tail, now nestled under her dress beside Lan's heavy ring on the leather cord around her neck. The large pockets of Elaine's coat bulged suspiciously.
You stole those apples? Nynaeve hissed quietly, pulling Elaine out into the crowded street. Elaine, we don't have to steal. Not yet, anyway. No? How much money do we have left? You have been not hungry very often at mealtimes the last few days. Well, I am not hungry, Nynaeve snapped, trying to ignore the hollow in her middle. Everything cost considerably more than she had expected. She had heard local people complaining about how prices had risen since the Shan Chen came. Give me one of those. The apple Elaine dug out of her pocket was small and hard, but it crunched with a delicious sweetness when Nynaeve bit into it. She licked the juice from her lips. How did you manage to... She jerked Elaine to a halt and peered into her face. Did you... She could not think of a way to say it with so many streaming by, but Elaine understood. Only a little. I made that stack of old melons with the soft spots fall, and when he started putting them back... She did not even have the grace, as Nynaeve saw it, to blush or look embarrassed. Unconcernedly eating one of the apples, she shrugged. There is no need to frown at me like that. I looked carefully to make sure there was no Damani close, she sniffed. If I were being held prisoner, I would not help my captors find other women to enslave. Although the way these Falmen behave, you would think they were lifelong servants of those who should be their enemies to the death. She looked around, openly contemptuous at the people hurrying by. It was possible to follow the path of any Shanchen, even common soldiers and even at a distance, by the ripples of bowing. They should resist. They should fight back. How? Against that. They had to step to the side of the street along with everyone else as a Shanchen patrol neared, climbing from the direction of the harbor. Nynaeve managed the bow, hands on knees, with face schooled to a perfect smoothness. Elaine was slower and made her bow with a distasteful twist of her mouth. There were 20 armored men and women in the patrol riding horses, for which Nynaeve was grateful. She could not become used to seeing people riding things that looked like bronze-scaled, tailless cats, and a rider on one of the flying beasts was always enough to make her feel dizzy. She was glad there were so few of them. Still, two leashed creatures trotted along with the patrol, like wingless birds with coarse leather skin and sharp beaks, higher above the cobblestones than the helmeted heads of the soldier. Their long, sinewy legs looked as if they could run faster than any horse. She straightened slowly after the Shan Chan were gone. Some of those who had bowed for the patrol came close to running. No one was comfortable at the sight of the Shan Chan's beasts except the Shan Chan themselves. Elaine, she said softly as they resumed their climb, if we are caught, I swear that before they kill us or do whatever they do, I will beg them on bended knees to let me stripe you from top to bottom with the stoutest switch I can find. If you still can't learn to be careful, maybe it's time to think about sending you back to Tar Valon, or home to Camelin, or anywhere but here. I am careful. At least I looked to be sure there was no Damani close by. What about you? I have seen you channel with one in plain sight. I made sure they weren't looking at me, Nynaeve muttered. She had had to ball up all her anger at women being chained like animals to manage it. And I only did it once, and it was only a trickle. A trickle? We had to spend 3 days hiding in our room breathing fish while they searched the town for whoever had done it. Do you call that being careful? I had to know if there was a way to unfasten those collars. She thought there was. She would have to test one more collar at least before she was certain, and she was not looking forward to it. She had thought, like Elaine, that the Domani must all be prisoners eager to escape, but it had been the woman in the collar who raised the cry. A man pushing a barrow that bumped over the cobblestones passed by, crying his services to sharpen scissors and knives. They should resist anyhow, Elaine growled. They act as if they do not see anything that happens around them, if there's a Shan Chan in it. Nynaeve only sighed. It did not help that she thought Elaine was at least partly right. At first she had thought some of the Falman's submission, at least, must be a pose, but she had found no evidence of any resistance at all. She had looked at first, hoping to find help in freeing Egwene and Min, but everyone took fright at the merest hint that they might oppose the Shan Chan, and she stopped asking before she drew the wrong sort of attention. In truth, she could not imagine how the people could fight. Monsters and Aes Sedai. How can you fight monsters and Aes Sedai? Ahead stood 5 tall stone houses, among the largest in the town, all together making up a block. One street short of them, Nynaeve found an alleyway beside a tailor's shop, where they could keep an eye on some of the tall houses' entrances, at least. It was not possible to see every door at once. She did not want to risk letting Elaine go off on her own to watch more, but it was not wise to go any closer. Above the rooftops on the next street, the golden hawk banner of the High Lord Turak flapped in the wind. Only women went in or out of those houses, and most of those were Suldam, alone or with Domani in tow. The buildings had been taken over by the Seanchan to house the Domani. Egwene had to be in there, and likely Min. They'd found no sign of Min so far, though it was possible she was as hidden by the crowds as they. Nynaeve had heard many tales of women and girls being seized on the streets or brought in from the villages. They all went into those houses, and if they were seen again, they wore a collar. Settling herself on a crate beside Elaine, she dug into the other woman's coat for a handful of the small apples. There were fewer local folk in the streets here. Everyone knew what the houses were, and everyone avoided them, just as they avoided the stables where the Seanchan kept their beasts. It was not difficult to keep an eye on the doors through spaces between the passers-by. Just 2 women stopping for a bite. Just 2 more people who could not afford to eat at an inn. Nothing to attract more than a passing glance. Eating mechanically, Nynaeve tried once more to plan. Being able to open the collar, if she really could, did no good at all unless she could reach Egwene. The apples did not taste so sweet anymore. From the narrow window of her tiny room under the eaves, one of a number roughly walled together from whatever had been there before, Egwene could see the garden where Domani were being walked by their Suldam. It had been several gardens before the Seanchan knocked down the walls that separated them and took the big houses to keep their Domani. The trees were all but leafless, but the Domani were still taken out for air, whether they wanted it or not. Egwene watched the garden because Renna was down there talking with another Suldam, and as long as she could see Renna, then Renna was not going to enter and surprise her. Some other Suldam might come. There were many more Suldam than Domani, and every Suldam wanted her turn wearing a bracelet. They called it being complete. But Renna still had charge of her training, and it was Renna who wore her bracelet 4 times out of 5. If anyone came, they would find no impediment to entering. There were no locks on the doors of Domani's rooms. Egwene's room held only a hard, narrow bed, a washstand with a chipped pitcher and bowl, 1 chair and a small table, but it had no room for more. Domani had no need of comfort or privacy or possessions. Domani were possessions. Min had a room just like this in another house, but Min could come and go as she would, or almost as she would. Seanchan were great ones for rules. They had more for everyone than the White Tower did for novices. Egwene stood far back from the window. She did not want any of the women below to look up and see the glow that she knew surrounded her as she channeled the one power, probing delicately at the collar around her neck, searching futilely. She could not even tell whether the band was woven or made of links. Sometimes it seemed one, sometimes the other. But it seemed all of a piece all the time. It was only a tiny trickle of the power, the merest drip that she could imagine, but it still beaded sweat on her face and made her stomach clench. That was one of the properties of the Eidam. If a Domani tried to channel without a Suldam wearing her bracelet, she felt sick, and the more of the power she channeled, the sicker she became. Lighting a candle beyond the reach of her arm would have made Egwene vomit. Once Renna had ordered her to juggle her tiny balls of light with the bracelet lying on the table. Remembering still made her shudder. Now the silver leash snaked across the bare floor and up the unpainted wooden wall to where the bracelet hung on a peg. The sight of it hanging there made her jaws clench with fury. A dog leashed so carelessly could have run away. If a Domani moved her bracelet as much as a foot from where it had last been touched by a Suldam, Renna had made her do that, too, had made her carry her own bracelet across the room, or try to. She was sure it had only been minutes before the Suldam snapped the bracelet firmly on her own wrist, but to Egwene the screaming and the cramps that had had her writhing on the floor had seemed to go on for hours. Someone tapped at the door, and Egwene jumped before she realized it could not be a Suldam. None of them would knock first. She let Saidar go anyway. She was beginning to feel decidedly ill. "Min?" "Here I am for my weekly visit," Min announced as she slipped inside and shut the door. Her cheeriness sounded a little forced, but she always did what she could to keep Egwene's spirits up. "How do you like it?" She spun in a little circle, showing off her dark green wool dress of Shanshan cut. A heavy matching cloak hung over her arm. There was even a green ribbon catching up her dark hair, though her hair was hardly long enough for it. Her knife was still in its sheath at her waist, though. Egwene had been surprised when Min first showed up wearing it, but it seemed the Shanshan trusted everyone until they broke a rule. "It's pretty," Egwene said cautiously. "But why?" "I haven't gone over to the enemy, if that is what you were thinking. It was this or else find some place to stay out in the town and maybe not be able to visit you again." She started to straddle the chair as she would have in breeches, gave a wry shake of her head, and turned it around to sit. "Everyone has a place in the pattern," she mimicked, "and the place of everyone must be readily apparent. That old hag Mulain apparently got tired of not knowing what my place was on site and decided I ranked with the serving girls. She gave me the choice. You should see some of the things Shanshan serving girls wear, the ones who serve the lords. It might be fun, but not unless I was betrothed, or better yet, married. Well, there's no going back. Not yet, anyway. Mulain burned my coat and breeches." Grimacing to show what she thought of that, she picked up a rock from a small pile on the table and bounced it from hand to hand. "It isn't so bad," she said with a laugh, "except that it has been so long since I wore skirts that I keep tripping over them." Egwene had had to watch her clothes being burned, too, including that lovely green silk. It had made her glad she had not brought more of the clothes the Lady Amalisa had given her, though she might never see any of them or the White Tower again. What she had on now was the same dark gray all Damani wore. "Damani have no possessions," it had been explained to her. "The dress a Damani wears, the food she eats, the bed she sleeps in, are all gifts from her Suldam. If a Suldam chooses that a Damani sleep on the floor instead of in a bed or in a stall in a stable, it is purely the choice of the Suldam." Mulain, who had charge of the Damani quarters, had a droning nasal voice, but she was sharp with any Damani who did not remember every word of her boring lectures. "I don't think there will be any going back for me ever," Egwene said, sighing, sinking down on her bed. She gestured to the rocks on the table. "Renna gave me a test yesterday. I picked out the piece of iron ore and the copper ore blindfolded every time she mixed them up. She left them all here to remind me of my success. She seems to think it was some kind of reward to be reminded. It doesn't seem any worse than the rest, not nearly as bad as making things explode like fireworks. But couldn't you have lied? Told her you didn't know which was which?" "You still do not know what this is like." Egwene tugged at the collar. Pulling did no more good than channeling had. "When Renna is wearing that bracelet, she knows what I'm doing with the power and what I am not. Sometimes she even seems to know when she isn't wearing it. She says Suldam develop an affinity, she calls it, after a while." She sighed. "No one even thought to test me on this earlier. Earth is one of the five powers that was strongest in men. When I picked out those rocks, she took me outside the town and I was able to point right to an abandoned iron mine. It was all overgrown and there wasn't any opening to be seen at all, but once I knew how, I could feel the iron ore still in the ground. There hasn't been enough to make it worth working in 100 years, but I knew it was there. I couldn't lie to her, Min. She knew I had sensed the mine as soon as I did. She was so excited she promised me a pudding with my supper." She felt her cheeks growing hot in anger and embarrassment. "Apparently," she said bitterly, "I am now too valuable to be wasted making things explode. Any Damani can do that. Only a handful can find ores in the ground. Light, I hate making things explode, but I wish that was all I could do. The color in her cheeks deepened. She did hate it, making trees tear themselves to splinters and the earth erupt. That was meant for battle, for killing, and she wanted no part of it. Yet anything the Shan Chan let her do was another chance to touch Sayidar, to feel the power flowing through her. She hated the things Rena and the other Suldam made her do, but she was sure that she could handle much more of the power now than she could before leaving Tar Valon. She certainly knew she could do things with it that no sister in the tower had ever thought of doing. They never thought of tearing the earth apart to kill men. "Perhaps you won't have to worry about any of it much longer," Min said, grinning. "I've found us a ship, Egwene. The captain has been held here by the Shan Chan, and he is about ready to sail with or without permission." "If he will take you, Min, go with him," Egwene said wearily. "I told you I'm valuable now. Rena says in a few days they're sending a ship back to Shan Chan, just to take me." Min's grin vanished and they stared at each other. Suddenly, Min hurled her rock at the pile on the table, scattering them. "There has to be a way out of here. There has to be a way to take that bloody thing off your neck." Egwene leaned her head back against the wall. "You know the Shan Chan have collected every woman they've been able to find who can channel even a speck. They come from all over, not just from here in Falma, but from the fishing villages and from farming towns inland. Taraboner and Damani women, passengers off ships they've stopped. There are two Aes Sedai among them." "Aes Sedai?" Min exclaimed. By habit, she looked around to make sure no Shan Chan had overheard her saying that name. "Egwene, if there are Aes Sedai here, they can help us. Let me talk to them and—"
"They can't even help themselves, Min. I only talk to one. Her name is Rima. The Suldam don't call her that, but that's her name. She wanted to make sure I knew it, and she told me there is another. She told me in between bouts of tears. She's Aes Sedai, and she was crying, Min. She has a collar on her neck. They make her answer to Pura, and she can't do anything more about it than I can. They captured her when Falma fell. She was crying because she's beginning to stop fighting against it, because she cannot take being punished anymore. She was crying because she wants to take her own life, and she cannot even do that without permission. Light, I know how she feels." Min shifted uneasily, smoothing her dress with suddenly nervous hands.
"Egwene, you don't want to—" "Egwene, you must not think of harming yourself. I will get you out somehow. I will."
"I'm not going to kill myself," Egwene said dryly. "Even if I could. Let me have your knife. Come on, I won't hurt myself. Just hand it to me."
Min hesitated before slowly taking her knife from its sheath at her waist. She held it out warily, obviously ready to leap if Egwene tried anything. Egwene took a deep breath and reached for the hilt. A soft quiver ran through the muscles of her arm. As her hand came within a foot of the knife, a cramp suddenly contorted her fingers. Eyes fixed, she tried to force her hand closer. The cramp seized her whole arm, knotting muscles to her shoulder. With a groan, she sank back, rubbing her arm and concentrating her thoughts on not touching the knife. Slowly, the pain began to lessen. Min stared at her incredulously. "What? I don't understand." "Damani are not allowed to touch a weapon of any kind." She worked her arm, feeling the tightness go. "Even our meat is cut for us. I don't want to hurt myself, but I could not if I did want to. No Damani is ever left alone where she might jump from a height, that window is nailed shut, or throw herself in a river."
"Well, that's a good thing. I mean, oh, I don't know what I mean. If you could jump in a river, you might escape."
Egwene went on dully, as if the other woman had not spoken. "They are training me, Min. The Suldam and the Aedam are training me. I cannot touch anything I even think of as a weapon. A few weeks ago, I considered hitting Rena over the head with that pitcher, and I could not pour wash water for 3 days. Once I'd thought of it that way, I not only had to stop thinking about hitting her with it, I had to convince myself I would never, under any circumstances, hit her with it before I could touch it again. She knew what had happened, told me what I had to do, and would not let me wash anywhere except with that pitcher and bowl. You are lucky it happened between your visiting days. Renna made sure I spent those days sweating from the time I woke to the time I fell asleep exhausted. I am trying to fight them, but they are training me as surely as they're training Pura. She clapped a hand to her mouth, moaning through her teeth. Her name is Rima. I have to remember her name, not the name they've put on her. She is Rima, and she's Yellow Aja, and she has fought them as long and as hard as she could. It is no fault of hers that she hasn't the strength left to fight any longer. I wish I knew who the other sister is that Rima mentioned. I wish I knew her name. Remember both of us, Min. Rima of the Yellow Aja, and Egwene Alvear. Not Egwene the Damani. Egwene Alvear of Emmons Field. Will you do that? Stop it, Min snapped. You stop it right this instant. If you get shipped off to Shanchen, I'll be right there with you. But I don't think you will. You know I've read you, Egwene. I don't understand most of it. I almost never do. But I see things I am sure link you to Rand and Perrin and Matt and, yes, even Galad. The light help you for a fool. How can any of that happen if the Shanchen take you off across the ocean? Maybe they're going to conquer the whole world, Min. If they conquer the world, there's no reason Rand and Galad and the rest could not end up in Shanchen. You ninny-headed goose! I am being practical, Egwene said sharply. I don't intend to stop fighting, not as long as I can breathe, but I don't see any hope that I'll ever have the Eidam off me either. Just as I don't see any hope that anyone is going to stop the Shanchen. Min, if this ship captain will take you, go with him. At least then one of us will be free. The door swung open and Renna stepped in. Egwene jumped to her feet and bowed sharply, as did Min. The tiny room was crowded for bowing, but Shanchen insisted on protocol before comfort. Your visiting day, is it? Renna said. I had forgotten. Well, there is training to be done even on visiting days. Egwene watched sharply as the Suldam took down the bracelet, opened it, and fastened it again around her wrist. She could not see how it was done. If she could have probed with the one power, she would have, but Renna would have known that immediately. As the bracelet closed around Renna's wrist, a look came onto the Suldam's face that made Egwene's heart sink. You have been channeling. Renna's voice was deceptively mild. There was a spark of anger in her eyes. You know that is forbidden except when we are complete. Egwene wet her lips. Perhaps I have been too lenient with you. Perhaps you believe that because you are valuable now, you will be allowed license. I think I made a mistake letting you keep your old name. I had a kitten called Tuli when I was a child. From now on, your name is Tuli. You will go now, Min. Your visiting day with Tuli is ended. Min hesitated only long enough for one anguished look at Egwene before leaving. Nothing Min could say or do would do anything except make matters worse, but Egwene could not help looking longingly at the door as it closed behind her friend. Renna took the chair, frowning at Egwene. I must punish you severely for this. We will both be called to the Court of the Nine Moons, you for what you can do, I as your Suldam and trainer, and I will not allow you to disgrace me in the eyes of the Empress. I will stop when you tell me how much you love being Damani, and how obedient you will be after this. And Tuli, make me believe every word. Chapter 43 A Plan. Outside in the low-ceilinged hallway, Min dug her nails into her palms at the first piercing cry from the room. She took a step toward the door before she could stop herself, and when she did stop, tears sprang up in her eyes. Light help me, all I can do is make it worse. Egwene, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Feeling worse than useless, she picked up her skirts and ran, and Egwene's screams pursued her. She could not make herself stay, and leaving made her feel a coward. Half blind with weeping, she found herself in the street before she knew it. She had intended to go back to her room, but now she could not do it. She could not stand the thought that Egwene was being hurt while she sat warm and safe under the next roof. Scrubbing the tears from her eyes, she swept her cloak around her shoulders and started down the street. Every time she cleared her eyes, new tears began trickling along her cheeks. She was not accustomed to weeping openly, but then she was not accustomed to feeling so helpless, so useless. She did not know where she was going, only that it had to be as far as she could reach from Egwene's cries. Min, The low-pitched shout brought her up short. At first, she could not make out who had called. Relatively few people walked the street this close to where the Damani were housed. Aside from a lone man trying to interest two Shan Chan soldiers into buying the picture he would draw of them with his colored chalks, everyone local tried to step along quickly, without actually appearing to run. A pair of Suldams strolled by, Damani trailing behind with eyes down. The Shan Chan women were talking about how many more Marath Damani they expected to find before they sailed. Min's eyes passed right over the two women in long fleece coats, then swung back in wonder as they came toward her.
Nynaeve? Elaine? None other.
Nynaeve's smile was strained. Both women had tight eyes as if they fought worried frowns. Min thought she had never seen anything as wonderful as the sight of them.
That color becomes you, Nynaeve continued. You should have taken up dresses long since, though I've thought of breeches myself since I saw them on you.
Her voice sharpened as she drew close enough to see Min's face.
What is the matter? You've been crying, Elaine said. Has something happened to Egwene?
Min gave a start and looked back over her shoulder. A Suldam and Damani came down the steps she had used and turned the other way, toward the stables and horse yards. Another woman with the lightning panels on her dress stood at the top of the stairs talking with someone still inside. Min grabbed her friends by the arms and hurried them down the street toward the harbor.
It's dangerous for you two here. Light, it's dangerous for you to be in Falma. There are Damani everywhere, and if they find you, you do know what Damani are? Oh, you don't know how good it is to see you both.
I imagine about half as good as it is to see you, Nynaeve said.
Do you know where Egwene is? Is she in one of those buildings? Is she all right?
Min hesitated a fraction before saying, She's as well as can be expected. Min could see it all too well if she told them what was happening to Egwene right that moment. Nynaeve was as likely as not to go storming back in an attempt to stop it.
Light, let it be over by now. Light, make her bend her stubborn neck just once before they almost break it first.
I don't know how to get her out, though. I found a ship captain who I think will take us if we can reach his ship with her. He won't help unless we make it that far, and I cannot say I blame him, but I have no idea how to do even that much.
A ship? Nynaeve said thoughtfully.
I had meant to simply ride east, but I must say I've worried about it. As nearly as I can make out, we would have to be almost off Toman Head before we were clear of Shan Chan patrols completely, and then there's supposed to be fighting of some sort on Almuth Plain. I never thought of a ship. We have horses, and we do not have money for passage.
How much does this man want?
Min shrugged.
I never got that far. We don't have any money either. I thought I could put off paying until after we sail. Afterwards, well, I don't think he'll put into any port where there are Shan Chan. Wherever he threw us off, it would have to be better than here. The problem is convincing him to sail at all. He wants to, but they patrol off the harbor too, and there is no way of telling if there's a Damani on one of their ships until it's too late.
Give me a Damani of my own on my deck, he says, and I will sail this instant. Then he starts talking about drafts and shoals and lee shores. I don't understand any of that, but as long as I smile and nod every now and then, he keeps talking, and I think if I can keep him talking long enough, he'll talk himself into sailing.
She drew a shuddering breath. Her eyes started stinging again. Only I don't think there's time to let him talk himself into it anymore. Nynaeve, they're going to send Egwene back to Shan Chan, and soon.
Elaine gasped.
But why? She is able to find ore, Min said miserably. A few days, she says, and I don't know if a few days is enough for this man to convince himself to sail. Even if it is, how do we take that shadow-spawned collar off her? How do we get her out of the house?
I wish Rand were here,
Elaine sighed, and when they both looked at her, she blushed and quickly added,
Well, he does have a sword. I wish we had somebody with a sword. 10 of them. 100.
It isn't swords or brawn we need now, Nynaeve said, but brains. Men usually think with the hair on their chests. She touched her chest absently, as if feeling something through her coat.
Most of them do.
We would need an army, Min said, a large army.
The Shan Chan were outnumbered when they faced the Taraboners and the Damani, and they won every battle easily, from what I hear. She hurriedly pulled Nynaeve and Elaine to the opposite side of the street as a Damani and Suldam climbed past them on the other side. She was relieved there was no need for urging. The other two watched the linked women go as warily as she. Since we don't have an army, the three of us will have to do it. I hope one of you can think of something I haven't. I've racked my brains, and I always stumble when it comes to the eyedom, the leash and collar. Suldam don't like anyone watching too closely when they open them. I think I can get you inside, if that will help. One of you, anyway. They think of me as a servant, but servants may have visitors as long as they keep to the servants' quarters. Nynaeve wore a thoughtful frown, but her face cleared almost immediately, taking on a purposeful look. Don't you worry, Min. I have a few ideas. I have not spent my time here idly. You take me to this man. If he is any harder to handle than the village council with their backs up, I will eat this coat. Elaine nodded, grinning, and Min felt the first real hope she had had since arriving in Falma. For an instant, Min found herself reading the auras of the other two women. There was danger, but that was to be expected. And new things, too, among the images she had seen before. It was like that sometimes. A man's ring of heavy gold floated above Nynaeve's head, and above Elaine's, a red-hot iron and an axe. They meant trouble, she was sure, but it seemed distant, somewhere in the future. Only for a moment did the reading last, then all she saw was Elaine and Nynaeve watching her expectantly. It's down near the harbor, she said. The sloping street became more crowded the further down they went. Street peddlers rubbed elbows with merchants who had brought wagons in from the inland villages and would not go out again until winter had come and gone. Hawkers, with their trays, called to the passers-by. Farmmen in embroidered cloaks brushed past farm families in heavy fleece coats. Many people had fled here from villages further from the coast. Men saw no point to it. They had leaped from the possibility of a visit from the Shan Chan to the certainty of Shan Chan all around them. But she had heard what the Shan Chan did when they first came to a village, and she could not blame the villagers too much for fearing another appearance. Everyone bowed when Shan Chan walked past or a curtained palanquin was carried by up the steep street. Min was glad to see Nynaeve and Elaine knew about the bowing. Bare-chested bearers paid no more mind to the people who bent themselves than did arrogant armored soldiers, but failure to bow would surely catch their eyes. They talked a little as they moved down the street, and she was surprised at first to learn they had been in the town only a few days less than Egwene and herself. After a moment, though, she decided it was no wonder they had not met earlier, not with the crowds in the streets. She had been reluctant to spend time further from Egwene than was necessary. There was always the fear that she would go for her allowed visit and find Egwene gone. And now she will be, unless Nynaeve can think of something. The smell of salt and pitch grew heavy in the air, and gulls cried, wheeling overhead. Sailors appeared in the throng, many still barefoot despite the cold. The inn had been hastily renamed the Three Plum Blossoms, but part of the word Watcher still showed through the slapdash paintwork on the sign. Despite the crowds outside, the common room was little more than half full. Prices were too high for many people to afford time sitting over ale. Roaring fires on hearths at either end of the room warmed it, and the fat innkeeper was in his shirt sleeves. He eyed the three women, frowning, and Min thought it was her Shan Chen dress that stopped him from telling them to leave. Nynaeve and Elaine, in their farm women's coats, certainly did not look as if they had money to spend. The man she was looking for was alone at a table in a corner, in his accustomed place, muttering into his wine. "Do you have time to talk, Captain Domon?" she said. He looked up, brushing a hand across his beard when he saw she was not alone. She still thought his bare upper lip looked odd with the beard.
"So you do bring friends to drink up my coin, do you? Well, that Shan Chan lord bought my cargo, so coin I have. Sit!"
Elaine jumped as he suddenly bellowed,
"Innkeeper! Muldwine here!"
"It's all right," Min told her, taking a place on the end of one of the benches at the table. "He only looks and sounds like a bear." Elaine sat down on the other end, looking doubtful.
A bear do I be?
Domon laughed.
Maybe I do. But what of you, girl? Have you given over thought of leaving? That dress do look Shan-Chan to me.
Never, Min said fiercely, but the appearance of a serving girl with the steaming spiced wine made her fall silent. Domon was just as wary. He waited until the girl had gone with his coins before saying,
Fortune prick me, girl, I mean no offense. Most people only want to go on with their lives, whether their lords be Shan-Chan or any other.
Nynaeve leaned her forearms on the table. We also want to go on with our lives, Captain, but without any Shan-Chan. I understand you intend to sail soon.
I would sail today if I could, Domon said glumly. Every 2 or 3 days that Turak do send for me to tell him tales of the old things I have seen. Do I look a glee man to you? I did think I could spin a tale or two and be on my way, but now I think when I no entertain him any longer, it be an even wager whether he do let me go or have my head cut off. The man do look soft, but he be as hard as iron and as cold-hearted.
Can your ship avoid the Shan-Chan? Nynaeve asked.
Fortune prick me. Could I make it out of the harbor without a Damani rip spray to splinters? I can. If I do no let a Shan-Chan ship with a Damani come too close once I do make the sea. There be shoal waters all along this coast, and spray do have a shallow draught. I can take her into waters those lumbering Shan-Chan hulks can no risk. They must be wary of the winds close inshore this time of year, and once I do have spray...
Nynaeve cut him off. Then we will take passage with you, Captain. There will be 4 of us, and I will expect you to be ready to sail as soon as we are aboard. Domon scrubbed a finger across his upper lip and peered into his wine.
Well, as to that, there still do be the matter of getting out of the harbor, you see. These Damani...
What if I tell you you will sail with something better than Damani? Nynaeve said softly. Min's eyes widened as she realized what Nynaeve intended. Almost under her breath, Elaine murmured, And you tell me to be careful. Domon had eyes only for Nynaeve, and they were wary eyes.
What do you mean?
He whispered. Nynaeve opened her coat to fumble at the back of her neck, finally pulling out a leather cord that had been tucked inside her dress. 2 gold rings hung on the cord. Min gasped when she saw one. It was the heavy man's ring she had seen when she read Nynaeve in the street. But she knew it was the other, slighter and made for a woman's slender finger that made Domon's eyes bulge. A serpent biting its own tail. You know what this means, Nynaeve said, starting to slip the serpent ring from the cord, but Domon closed his hand over it.
Put it away.
His eyes darted uneasily. No one was looking at them that Min could see, but he looked as if he thought everyone was staring.
That ring do be dangerous, if it be seen.
As long as you know what it means, Nynaeve said with a calm that made Min envious. She pulled the cord from Domon's hand and retied it around her neck.
I know, he said hoarsely. I do know what it means. Maybe there do be a chance if you... 4, you say? This girl who do like to listen to my tongue wag, she do be one of the 4, I take it. And you, and...
He frowned at Elaine.
Surely this child is no... No one like you.
Elaine straightened angrily, but Nynaeve put a hand on her arm and smiled soothingly at Domon. She travels with me, Captain. You might be surprised by what we can do even before we earn the right to a ring. When we sail, you will have 3 on your ship who can fight Damani if need be.
3,
he breathed.
There do be a chance. Maybe.
His face brightened for a moment, but as he looked at them, it grew serious again.
I should take you to spray right now and cast off, but fortune prick me if I can no tell you what you face here if you stay, and maybe even if you go with me. Listen to me and mark what I do say.
He took another cautious look around, and still lowered his voice and chose his words carefully.
I did see a woman who wore a ring like that, taken by the Shan-Chan. A pretty, slender little woman she was, with a big man with her, who did look as if he did know how to use his sword. One of them must have been careless, for the Shan Chen did have an ambush laid for them. The big man put 6-7 soldiers on the ground before he did die himself. The woman... 6 Damani they did put around her, stepping out of the alleys of a sudden. I did think she would do something, you know what I mean? But I know nothing of these things. One moment she did look as if she would destroy them all, then a look of horror did come on her face and she did scream.
They cut her off from the true source.
Elaine's face was white. No matter, Nynaeve said calmly. We will not allow the same to be done to us.
Aye, mayhap it will be as you say, but I will remember it until I die. Rima, help me. That is what she did scream. And one of the Damani did fall down crying, and they did put one of those collars on the neck of the woman, and I did run.
He shrugged and rubbed his nose and peered into his wine.
I have seen 3 women taken, and I have no stomach for it. I would leave my aged grandmother standing on the dock to sail from here, but I did have to tell you.
Egwene said they have 2 prisoners,
Min said slowly.
Rima, a yellow, and she didn't know who the other is.
Nynaeve gave her a sharp look, and she fell silent, blushing. From the look on Domon's face, it had not furthered their cause any to tell him the Shan Chan held 2 Aes Sedai, not just 1. Yet abruptly he stared at Nynaeve and took a long gulp of wine.
Do that be why you are here? To free those 2? You did say there would be 3 of you.
You know what you need to know, Nynaeve told him briskly. You must be ready to sail on the instant any time in the next 2 or 3 days. Will you do it, or will you remain here to see if they will cut off your head after all? There are other ships, Captain, and I mean to have passage assured on one of them today.
Min held her breath. Under the table her fingers were knotted. Finally, Domon nodded.
I will be ready.
When they returned to the street, Min was surprised to see Nynaeve sag against the front of the inn as soon as the door closed.
Are you ill, Nynaeve? She asked anxiously.
Nynaeve drew a long breath and stood up straight, tugging at her coat.
With some people, she said, you have to be certain. If you show them one glimmer of doubt, they'll sweep you off in some direction you don't want to go. Light, but I was afraid he was going to say no. Come, we have plans yet to make. There are still 1 or 2 small problems to work out.
I hope you don't mind fish, Min, Elaine said.
1 or 2 small problems? Min thought as she followed them. She hoped very much that Nynaeve was not just being certain again.
Chapter 44 5 Will Ride Forth. Perrin eyed the villagers warily, self-consciously hitching at the 2 short cloak, embroidered on the chest and with some holes in it not even patched. But none of them gave him a second glance despite his strange mix of clothes and the axe on his hip. Huron had a coat with blue spirals across the chest under his cloak, and Matt wore a pair of baggy trousers that made bunches where they were stuffed into his boots. That had been all they had been able to find that would fit back in the abandoned village. Perrin wondered if this one would be abandoned soon. Half the stone houses were empty, and in front of the inn, up the dirt street from them, 3 ox carts, loaded too heavily, in great mounds, and everything covered with roped canvas, stood with families gathered around them. As he watched them, huddling together and saying their goodbyes to those who were staying, at least for the time being, Perrin decided it was not lack of interest in strangers on the villagers' part. They were carefully avoiding looking at him and the others. These people had learned not to show curiosity about strangers, even strangers who were obviously not Shan Chan. Strangers might be dangerous these days on Tomon Head. They had encountered the same studious indifference in other villages. There were more towns here within a few leagues of the coast, everyone holding itself independent. At any rate, they had until the Shan Chan came.
I say it's time to get the horses, Matt said, before they decide to start asking questions. There has to be a first time for it.
Huron was staring at a big blackened circle on ground that marred the brown grass of the village green. It had a weathered look, but no one had done anything to erase it.
Maybe 6 or 8 months ago, he muttered. and it still stinks. The whole village council and their families. Why would they do a thing like that? Who knows why they do anything, Matt muttered. Shan-Chan don't seem to need a reason for killing people. None I can figure out, anyway. Perrin tried not to look at the charred patch. Huron, are you sure about Fane? Huron? It had been hard to make the sniffer look at anything else since they entered the village. Huron! What? Oh, Fane. Yes. Huron's nostrils flared, and right away he wrinkled his nose. There's no mistaking that, even old as it is. Makes a murderer smell like roses. He passed through here, all right. But I think he was alone. No Trollocs, anyway. And if he had any dark friends with him, they hadn't been up to much lately. There was some sort of agitation up by the inn, people shouting and pointing. Not at Perrin and the other two, but at something Perrin could not see in the low hills east of the village. Can we get the horses now? Matt said. That could be Shan-Chan. Perrin nodded, and they broke into a run for where they had tied their horses behind an abandoned house. As Matt and Huron disappeared around the corner of the house, Perrin looked back toward the inn and stopped in astonishment. The Children of the Light were riding into town, a long column of them. He leaped after the others. White cloaks! They wasted only an instant staring at him in disbelief before they were scrambling into their saddles. Keeping houses between them and the main street of the village, the three galloped out of the village westward, watching over their shoulders for pursuit. Ingtar had told them to avoid anything that might slow them down, and White Cloaks asking questions would certainly do that, even if they could manage answers that satisfied. Perrin kept an even closer watch than the other two. He had his own reasons for not wanting to meet White Cloaks. The axe in my hands, light, what I wouldn't give to change that. The lightly wooded hills soon hid the village, and Perrin began to think maybe there was nothing chasing them after all. He reined in and motioned the other two to stop. When they did, eyeing him questioningly, he listened. His ears were sharper than they had once been, but he heard no sounds of hoofbeats. Reluctantly, he reached out with his mind in search of wolves. Almost immediately he found them, a small pack lying up for the day in the hills above the village they had just left. There were moments of astonishment so strong, he almost thought it was his own. These wolves had heard rumors, but they had not really believed there were two legs who could talk to their kind. He sweated through the minutes it took to get past introducing himself. He gave the image of Young Bull in spite of himself, and added his own smell, according to the custom among wolves. Wolves were great ones for formalities on first meetings. But finally, he managed to get his question through. They really had no interest in any two legs who could not talk to them, but at last they glided down to take a look, unseen by the dull eyes of the two legs. After a time, images came back to him, what the wolves saw. White-cloaked men on horses crowding around the village, riding among the houses, riding around it, but none leaving, especially not westward. The wolves said all they smelled moving west was himself and two other two legs with three of the hard-footed tall ones. Perrin let go the contact with the wolves gratefully. He was aware of Huron and Matt looking at him. They aren't following, he said.
How can you be sure? Matt demanded.
I am, he snapped. Then more softly, I just am. Matt opened his mouth and closed it again, and finally said, Well, if they aren't coming after us, I say we go back to Ingtar and get on Fane's trail. That dagger isn't coming any closer just standing here. We can't pick it up again this close to that village, Huron said. Not without risking running into White Cloaks. I don't think Lord Ingtar would appreciate that, and not Varen Sedain either. Perrin nodded. We'll follow it on a few miles anyway. But keep a close lookout. We can't be too far from Falman now. It won't do any good to avoid the White Cloaks and ride right into a Shan-Chan patrol. As they started out again, he could not help wondering what White Cloaks were doing there. Jeffrum Bornhald peered down the village street, sitting his saddle while the legion spread through the small town and surrounded it. There had been something about the heavy-shouldered man who had dashed out of sight, something that tickled his memory. Yes, of course. The lad who claimed to be a blacksmith. What was his name? Bayar pulled up in front of him, hand on heart. The village is secured, my lord captain.
Villagers in heavy sheepskin coats milled uneasily as white-cloaked soldiers herded them together near the overloaded carts in front of the inn. Crying children clung to their mothers' skirts, but no one looked defiant. Dull eyes stared out of the adult faces, waiting passively for whatever was going to happen. For that much, Bornhald was grateful. He had no real desire to make an example of any of these people, and no wish at all to waste time. Dismounting, he tossed his reins to one of the children.
See that the men are fed, Bayer. Put the prisoners in the inn with as much food and water as they can carry. Then nail all the doors and shutters closed. Make them think I am leaving some men to stand guard, yes?
Bayer touched his heart again and wheeled his horse to shout orders. The herding began anew into the flat-roofed inn, while other children ransacked houses searching for hammers and nails. Watching the sullen faces that filed past him, Bornhald thought it should be 2 or 3 days before any of them found enough courage to break out of the inn and find there were no guards. 2 or 3 days was all he needed, but he did not intend to risk alerting the Seanchan to his presence now. Leaving enough men behind to make the questioners believe his entire legion was still scattered across Almuth Plain, he had brought more than 1,000 of the children, nearly the length of Toman Head, without giving alarm, so far as he knew. 3 skirmishes with Seanchan patrols had ended quickly. The Seanchan had grown used to facing already defeated rabble. The Children of the Light had been a deadly surprise. Yet the Seanchan knew how to fight like the Dark One's hordes, and he could not help remembering the one skirmish that had cost him better than 50 men. He was still not sure which of the 2 arrow-riddled women he had stared at afterwards had been the Aes Sedai.
Fire!
One of Bornhald's men handed him water in a pottery cup from one of the carts. It was icy in his throat. The gaunt-faced man swung down from his saddle.
Yes, my lord captain.
When I engage the enemy, Bayer, Bornhald said slowly, you will not take part. You will watch from a distance, and you will carry word to my son of what happens.
But my lord captain, that is my order, child Bayer, he snapped. You will obey, yes?
Bayer's back stiffened, and he stared straight ahead.
As you command, my lord captain.
Bornhald studied him for a moment. The man would do as he was told, but it would be better to give him another reason than letting Dane know how his father had died. It was not as if he did not have knowledge that was urgently needed in Amador. Since that skirmish with the Aes Sedai, was it one of them or both? 30 Seanchan soldiers, good fighters, and 2 women cost me twice the casualties they did. Since then, he no longer expected to live to leave Toman Head. In the small chance the Seanchan did not see to it, very likely the questioners would.
When you have found my son, he should be with Lord Captain Eamon Valda near Tarvalen, and told him, you will ride to Amador and report to the Lord Captain Commander, to Padron Nile personally, child Bayer. You will tell him what we have learned of the Seanchan. I will write it out for you. Be sure he understands that we can no longer count on the Tarvalen witches being content with manipulating events from the shadows. If they fight openly for the Seanchan, we will surely face them elsewhere.
He hesitated. That last was the most important of all. They had to know, under the Dome of Truth, that for all their vaunted oaths, Aes Sedai would march into battle. It gave him a sinking feeling. A world where Aes Sedai wielded the power in battle. He was not sure that he would regret leaving it. But there was one more message he wanted carried to Amador.
And Bayar, tell Padron Nile how we were used by the questioners.
As you command, my lord captain,
Bayer said, but Bornhald sighed at the expression on his face. The man did not understand. To Bayer, orders were to be obeyed, whether they came from the lord captain or the questioners, whatever they were.
I will write that out for you to hand to Padron Nile as well, he said.
He was not sure how much good it would do in any case. A thought came to him, and he frowned at the inn, where some of his men were loudly hammering nails through shutters and doors.
Perrin, he muttered. That was his name. Perrin from the 2 rivers.
The Dark Friend, my lord captain.
Perhaps, Bayar.
He was not entirely certain himself, but surely a man who seemed to have wolves fight for him could be nothing else. Certainly this Perrin had killed two of the children.
I thought I saw him when we rode in, but I do not remember anyone among the prisoners who looked like a blacksmith.
Their blacksmith left a month ago, my lord captain. Some of them were complaining that they'd have been gone before we came if they had not had to mend their cartwheels themselves. Do you believe it was the man Perrin, my lord captain?
Whoever it was, he is not accounted for, no. And he may carry word of us to the Shan Chan.
A Darkrend would surely do so, my lord captain.
Bornhold gulped the last of the water and tossed the cup aside.
There will be no meal for the men here, Bayar. I will not let these Shan Chan catch me napping, whether it is Perrin of the Two Rivers or someone else who warns them. Mount the Legion, child Bayar.
Far above their heads, a huge winged shape circled, unnoticed. In the clearing amid the hilltop thicket where they had made their camp, Rand worked the forms with his sword. He wanted to keep from thinking. He had had his chances to search with Huron for Fane's trail. They all had, in twos and threes, so they would not attract attention. And they had all found nothing so far. Now they waited for Matt and Perrin to come back with the sniffer. They should have been back hours ago. Loyal was reading, of course, and there was no telling if his ear twitching was over his book or the scouting party's lateness. But Uno and most of the Shinaran soldiers sat tensely, oiling their swords or kept watch through the trees as if they expected Shan Chan to appear any moment. Only Varen appeared unconcerned. The Aes Sedai sat on a log beside their small fire, murmuring to herself and writing in the dirt with a long stick. Every so often, she would shake her head and scrub it all out with her foot and start over again. All the horses were saddled and ready to go, the Shinaran's animals each tied to a lance driven into the ground.
Heron waiting in the rushes, Ingtar said.
He sat with his back against a tree, sliding a sharpening stone along his sword and watching Rand.
You should not be bothering with that one. It leaves you completely open.
For an instant, Rand balanced on the ball of one foot, sword held reversed in both hands over his head, then shifted smoothly to the other foot.
Lan says it's good for developing balance.
It was not easy keeping his balance. In the void, it often seemed he could maintain his equilibrium atop a rolling boulder, but he did not dare assume the void. He wanted to too much to trust himself.
What you practice too often, you use without thinking. You will put your sword in the other man with that, if you're quick, but not before he has his through your ribs. You are practically inviting him. I don't think I could see a man face me so open and not put my sword in him, even knowing he might strike home at me if I did.
It's only for balancing, Tar. Rand wavered on one foot and had to put the other down to keep from falling. He slammed the blade into its scabbard and picked up the gray cloak that had been his disguise. It was moth-eaten and ragged around the bottom, but lined with thick fleece, and the wind was picking up, cold and out of the west. I wish they'd come back. As if his wish had been a signal, Uno spoke up with quiet urgency.
Bloody horsemen coming, my lord.
Scabbards rattled as men who did not already have their blades out bared them. Some leaped into their saddles, snatching up lances. The tension faded as Huron led the others into the clearing at a trot, and came again as he spoke.
We found the trail, Lord Ingtar.
We followed it almost to Falma, Matt said as he dismounted.
A flush in his pale cheeks seemed a mocking of health. The skin was tight over his skull. The Shinarans gathered around, excited as he was.
It's just Fane, but there isn't anywhere else he could be going. He must have the dagger.
We found white cloaks too, Perrin said, swinging down from his saddle.
Hundreds of them. White cloaks,
Ingtar exclaimed, frowning.
Here? Well, if they do not trouble us, we will not trouble them. Perhaps if the Shan Chan are occupied with them, it will help us reach the horn.
His eyes fell on Varen, still seated by the fire.
I suppose you will tell me I should have listened to you, Aes Sedai. The man did go to Falma.
The wheel weaves as the wheel wills, Varen said placidly.
With Taviren, what happens is what was meant to happen. It may be the pattern demanded these extra days. The pattern puts everything in its place precisely, and when we try to alter it, especially if Taviran are involved, the weaving changes to put us back into the pattern as we were meant to be. There was an uneasy silence that she did not seem to notice. She sketched on idly with the stick. Now, however, I think perhaps we should make plans. The pattern has brought us to Falma at last. The Horn of Valir has been taken to Falma.
Ingtar squatted across the fire from her. When enough people say the same thing, I tend to believe it, and the local people say the Seanchan do not seem to care who comes or goes in Falma. I will take Kieran and a few others into the town. Once he follows Fane's trail to the Horn, well, then we shall see what we shall see.
With her foot, Varen scrubbed out a wheel she had drawn in the dirt. In its place, she drew two short lines that touched at one end. Ingtar and Huron, and Matt, as he can sense the dagger if he comes close enough. You do want to, don't you, Matt?
Matt appeared torn, but he gave a jerky nod. I have to, don't I? I have to find that dagger.
A third line made a bird track. Varen looked sideways at Rand.
I'll go, he said. That is why I came.
An odd light appeared in the Aes Sedai's eyes, a knowing glimmer that made him uneasy.
To help Matt find the dagger, he said sharply, and Ingtar find the horn.
And Fane, he added to himself. I have to find Fane if it isn't already too late. Varen scratched a fourth line, turning the bird track to a lopsided star. And who else? She said softly. She held the stick poised.
Me,
Perrin said. A hair before Loyal chimed in with,
I think I would like to go too.
And Uno and the other Shinarans all began clamoring to join.
Perrin spoke first, Varen said, as if that settled it.
She added a fifth line and drew a circle around all five. The hair on Rand's neck stirred. It was the same wheel she had rubbed out in the first place.
Five ride forth, she murmured.
I really would like to see Falma,
Loyal said.
I've never seen the Arath Ocean. Besides, I can carry the chest if the horn is still in it.
You'd better include me at least, my lord,
Uno said.
You and Lord Rand will need another sword at your backs if those bloody Seanchan try to stop you.
The rest of the soldiers rumbled the same sentiment.
Do not be silly,
Varen said sharply. Her stare silenced them all.
All of you cannot go. No matter how uncaring the Seanchan are about strangers, they will surely take notice of 20 soldiers. And you look like nothing else, even without armor. And one or two of you will make no difference. Five is few enough to enter without attracting attention, and it is fitting that three of them should be the three Taviran among us. No, Loyal, you must stay behind too. There are no Ogier on Tilman Head. You would attract as many eyes as all the rest put together.
What about you? Rand asked.
Varen shook her head.
You forget the Damani.
Her mouth twisted around the word in distaste.
The only way I could help you would be if I channeled the power, and that would be no help at all if I brought those down on you. Even if they were not close enough to see, one might well feel a woman, or a man for that matter, channeling, if care was not taken to keep the power channeled small.
She did not look at Rand. To him she seemed ostentatious in not doing so, and Matt and Perrin were suddenly intent on their own feet.
A man! Ingtar snorted. Varen Sedai. Why add problems? We have enough already without supposing men channeling. But it would be well if you were there, if we have need of you.
No. You five must go alone.
Her foot scrubbed across the wheel drawn in the dirt, partially obliterating it. She studied each of them in turn, intent and frowning.
Five will ride forth.
For a moment it seemed that Ingtar would ask again, but meeting her level gaze, he shrugged and turned to Huron.
How long to reach Falma?
The sniffer scratched his head.
If we left now and rode through the night, we could be there by sunrise tomorrow morning.
Then that is what we will do. I'll waste no more time. All of you saddle your horses. Uno, I want you to bring the others along behind us.
but keep out of sight, and do not let anyone...
Ran peered at the sketched wheel as Ingtar went on with his instructions. It was a broken wheel now, with only 4 spokes. For some reason, that made him shiver. He realized Varen was watching him, dark eyes bright and intent like a bird's. It took an effort to pull his gaze away and begin getting his things together.
"You're letting fancies take you," he told himself irritably. "She can't do anything if she isn't there."